The Athletic.
Hello, listener. Sorry to kick off with a notice and not some kind of loquacious intro about Macton Town or something similar, but we need your help. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. It's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Football Manager Show by The Athletic, the podcast that's just started a new game, but already wants to quit to start a Celtic save. Yes, it's happy update day, everyone. By now, the pipes on your Steam servers should have rattled and gurgled and eventually deposited 32 gallons of piping hot new data into your copy of Football Manager. With me on the show to discuss what's changed, what it all means, is Sports Interactive's Neil Brock. We've also got something lovely in the community centre. We've got your letters, including a cry for help with youth development. And as always, there's the intensifying panic dream that is the FM Bundesliga challenge. Not for the faint-hearted, that one. But first of all, welcome back to the show, Neil Brock, and please remind us, what do you do all day?
Thanks for having me back again. Yeah, I'm the Community and Customer Experience Manager over at Sports Interactive, which means I spend a lot of my time chatting with our community, with all the people on the forums and stuff like that, gathering feedback and just getting information from them to help us make our game even better. But I also get a bit of time to actually play the game as well, so can't complain at all there.
It must be a very, very happy time for you the day after update day, because I'd imagine most of the days before update day are spent fielding questions about when the update's out.
Yeah, you've nailed that one, I think. It is. I mean, people get excited around this time of year. Obviously, they see the real-life transfer window close, and they're just desperate to get their hands on all those new shiny players that have suddenly joined their teams. And I can't say I blame them, to be perfectly honest.
And it's an incredible thing, because I'm a child of the 80s, so my base expectation of a video game is, like, it comes on a cassette and it takes 10 minutes to load. And even as a teenager in the 90s, I was easily able to adapt to three floppy disks and a manual like a John Grisham novel. But I never get my head around the idea of an update and how wonderful it is. Like a game that just adapts and evolves on its own without you having to do anything complicated just throughout the course of its own lifetime. Tell me about this particular update. What exactly has changed?
Well, I think first of all, it's just sort of make this clear, it's still the Football Manager you know and love. It's not like we've suddenly changed everything with this update and now it's some sort of crazy battle royale game. So it's fine. We're all still managers. We understand what we're doing. But aside from that, there's a lot to get excited about, especially considering we've been able to make more database changes than we've ever been able to do for a winter update. And sort of I've been at the studio for a very long time and this is a big deal for us. Sort of in previous years, it had been a case of our kind of researchers would go away with their teams, update and kind of put it back in bit by bit. Well, now we've got something called the Online Research Database that allows people to make changes a bit more on the fly. They can see what other people are doing, other researchers are doing. So we've really got it all at everyone's fingertips. So it makes it much easier and it's allowed us to do so much more. So that's things like managerial changes, sort of transfers, or even sort of making that random reserve team manager have the correct date of birth in game. I mean, it may not be exciting for you or I, but if that random reserve team manager plays Football Manager, they're going to be really excited. So it's a case of now, if we can find out the information, we've been able to put it into the game. So that's great for us for this update.
So what's the cutoff point? Because it must be an absolute headache. You know, I can imagine like the whole Football Manager office just staring and refreshing the Watford Twitter feed every 5 minutes just to see if anything's changed. What's like the most recent change?
Well, it's tough, actually. I don't know what... someone must have put something in the water in Bristol because all of a sudden you've got sort of Joey Barton and Nigel Pearson rocking up. But so unfortunately, they were a bit too late for the deadline. We've kind of got this hard deadline that allows us an opportunity to sort of compile all the data. That way we can kind of check it ourselves, give it to our QA team, our sort of dream team of alpha testers as well, that they can all have a look at it and make sure everything's right. One of the sort of latest things that went in... was in relation to Mac from It's Always Sunny and Ryan Reynolds suddenly now being Wrexham's sort of owners and chairman. So that made it into the game. That was only finalised quite recently.
And that's brilliant. Tell me about that. I mean, Wrexham must have had a sort of seismic change behind the scenes in the game. Are they down as sort of generous patient owners, or have you hidden some kind of Machiavellian Hollywood twist in there?
I think it's one of those we'd quite like people to kind of discover for themselves, but I think it wouldn't surprise us at all if Wrexham become one of the sort of most played teams following this update when people are starting new games. But I mean, we do have to be careful as well with these kind of last minute changes as well. I think it was yesterday or a couple of days ago, Bradford have suddenly appointed joint managers, which is something where it's not the kind of thing where you can just be like, oh, we'll just throw that into the data and see how it goes. That's definitely something we kind of have to look at and be, well, how is this actually going to affect the game? What's going to happen? I mean, it seems to me it's been quite a while since the sort of Houllier and Evans days back in the 90s, yeah, where you've had joint managers. So yeah, I'd be interested to see how that plays out.
It's a funny one, isn't it? It didn't work at Liverpool, but it did work for Alan Kirbishley and Steve Gripp for a time. But that's, yes, probably going a bit too far back. Do the players' attributes change sort of dynamically over the course of the season? I mean, there must be some Liverpool players who've had appropriate adjustments over the last few weeks.
Well, if you're asking as a criteria now, if you play centre-half for Liverpool, you suddenly have injury proneness of 20. No, we've not done that. But there have been like loads and loads of changes. And these will be the types of things where we change their current ability, which is their overall current ability within the game. And to do that, that means attributes, some will go up, some will go down to kind of balance that. In some instances, their current ability may have actually stayed the same, but the researcher may have noticed sort of subtle changes in the way they're playing. Perhaps they're not quite as pacey as they used to be, but their positional sense has increased. So they may have rebalanced it slightly there. So it's always kind of worth having a look at the players and kind of seeing what's going on. But then there's also some instances where a youth team player suddenly come into the first team and they realise, you know what, this kid's got a lot more than we first envisaged. And their potential ability may have been tweaked. So when you play in your game after a few seasons, suddenly they're sort of really getting a lot of interest from better clubs, they're playing really well, and they're becoming a better all-round player. So, and I mentioned the online research database being a bit of a game changer earlier. I mean, this resource, as I said, allows people to kind of see what other researchers are doing. So it allows them to kind of balance it out all together rather than in isolation. And I suppose it's not just about changing the attributes. We've been able to actually add players in as well. So some of you may have seen that Mokoko from Dortmund's now gone into the game. Previously, he was a bit too young, and due to legal reasons, we weren't allowed to include him. But now, for this brand new update, if you start a new game, he will appear in game, albeit you're going to have to wait till January before you can actually start playing him. So there's a little bit of a teaser there. Like, I can see other Bundesliga defenders kind of thinking, oh, when's he actually going to come into the team? It's January. That's when they've got to be a bit more worried, I think.
There's some cosmetic changes as well. I particularly like the addition of the assist credit in the game footage.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that sometimes it's just quality of life things. It's something that you think, oh, wow, that's not a big deal. It's a sort of a tiny change. But for me, it's having played the game a bit since we've done this update, I kind of think, well, how did I ever manage without this? It really is, like, really interesting to kind of see, because sometimes if someone scores a screamer and you wonder, well, actually, I didn't even see who played the pass or what happened beforehand. And it just gives you that little nudge to think, you know what, that AMC that I've been really training as a playmaker, it is paying off. He does actually get the odd assist here and there. And it's good to kind of see it there in the goal pop-up. So it's a great addition. As well as that, we've done kind of quite a lot of competition changes as well. Like if you play Major League Soccer, we've been able to add the 2021 season schedule. And there's been all sorts of things like that. We've got a bit more of a detailed change list, which can be found on the community forums as well. So if anyone's really interested in sort of delving into the sort of smaller details, that's the place to do it. So
there's a slight change in the press conference as well, isn't it? Where you get the information for pertinent questions. So if they say, you know, you didn't have much possession in that game, in the top right corner, up pops the match stats, so you can sort of see it. I think that's the new one, because I only noticed it last night, and it proved really helpful.
Again, it's one of those quality of life things. We're always trying to sort of improve small things in the game. I think for updates of this type, we're not going to sort of rip everything up and start again. It's kind of looking at the feedback that we've been getting from within the community and the people playing our games, and trying to implement some of that without obviously trying to bite off more than we can chew and sort of making a huge change that might have a sort of negative knock on elsewhere. So yeah, it's, I mean, we're happy with what we've been able to do with this update. And I think, as you said, these kind of quality of life things, these are also for those people who have kind of got a save that they're really happy with. They don't really want to start a new game. Like personally, I've got a game that I'm six seasons into. I finally qualified for the Champions League. And I'm like, you know what? There's no way I'm leaving this save to start a new one now. I'm finally where I want to be. So I think people in that situation are going to enjoy this update just as much. So.
Oddly, I was more than happy to take the opportunity of a fresh start. But there will be some people who will think, well, has anything changed with the match engine? Because I know that, yeah, we've spoken to colleagues of yours whose job it is to find flaws in the game. And as someone who scores some 70% of his goals from near post corners and long throw-ins, has anything changed that might just end it for me at Schalke?
Well, we all sat down in a big meeting room. We decided we didn't want to punish you like that, so... No, it wasn't like that. We haven't been able to do massive changes to the match engine at this point. Again, it's one of those situations where there's very much talking about balance, in the sense of if we make a big change now, there's a chance it'll kind of break people's tactics, or it'll have big knock-ons whereby things perhaps aren't as balanced as they currently are. We're quite happy with the match engine as it is now. I say quite happy. We're very happy with the match engine as it is. And the feedback we've been getting from the community sort of is encouraging that. They've basically said that this match engine is probably the strongest we've ever done, which is sort of great to hear. But that doesn't mean there aren't areas that we would love to improve. And there's already sort of plans for longer term, for future versions, for things that we can do. But I think sometimes it's easy to overlook that at the studio, we don't have like these giant dials on the wall where it's like someone shouts from across the room, oh, we need to increase the goals a little bit, or oh, we need a few less corners, and someone just goes and cranks the dial. It really is incredibly complex how the match engine works, and how every tiny little change can have a knock-on in a different area. You might think, say, if a striker's in a one-on-one situation, you can just say, oh, well, just increase his sort of shooting proficiency, it'll be fine. But again, like, looking at all the attributes and the way the game balances out, it's just not that simple. So whilst we'd always love to kind of take strides forward with the match engine with every single update, we've kind of thought to ourselves, this is the sort of time of year whereby we can make some changes to the game, but with the match engine, we're happy with how it is at the moment, and we don't want to be making huge changes.
It's worth remembering as well that there may be things that you discover that work really well, and you think, hey, I've cracked the game. You haven't cracked the game. You've just done what any football manager would do, say in the long throw-ins thing. All I'm doing is emulating Tony Pulis. Unfortunately, what happens after about half a season is everyone figures it out, and that's where it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with football. It is always changing. You go back and watch games from even sort of 5 and 10 years ago, there's kind of tactics that have completely gone out of fashion. And you're right, there are certain elements in game that eventually kind of will get a little bit found out. I heard you speaking in an episode a little while back in terms of sort of the Gegenpress and how players eventually, they're going to get absolutely shattered, and they're not going to be able to keep that up for the whole season. So whilst you might be laughing after 20 games thinking, oh, this is easy, all of a sudden your form kind of nosedives, your players start getting injured, and it becomes a bit more of a struggle. So, but on the match engine side, there was one thing that we did sort of tweak a bit for this update, and that's in relation to actually goalkeeper instructions with their distribution. We found that when you sort of instructed a goalkeeper, say, to roll out to a centre half or maybe go long for a big target man, it wasn't actually following the instructions as much as it probably should be. So we kind of tweaked that to make it a bit more effective. But saying that, if you're saying, oh, I want to roll out to my fullback and he's got like a winger still on his toes, your goalie's going to use a bit of common sense. It won't do it every single time, but it should be a bit better than it was before.
Ah, that's excellent. Yeah, and there are other factors involved in that as well, like the goalkeeper's teamwork rate. That will control how closely he obeys instructions. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And to the goalkeeper as well, decisions sometimes. So that's the kind of thing where if they look at a situation, if they've got terrible decisions, they might think, oh, well, I'll just leave it up to the fullback. I'm sure they'll be fine. Also, obviously, a goalie with good decisions will look at it and think, you know what? I'm not going anywhere near that. Yeah. So
just hit it.
Exactly, yeah.
We had some questions on our Twitter feed about VAR and a sense that it's predictable. Now, I can't speak too much for this because I've spent most of my time in League One, the Championship and the fourth tier of Scottish football. So what's the story here with VAR?
Well, we've had a few chats sort of within the team about this, with the match team especially, and sort of for regular listeners, they've obviously heard from CJ and Jack in the past as well. And it's definitely an area we've kind of picked out that we'll hope to improve for a future version. I think at the moment, what a lot of people are seeing are with the offside decisions. So if the sort of referee goes over to check in the little monitor on the side with an offside decision, nearly always it's going to be considered offside. And the reason why that's happening is because if it's onside, he's just getting someone whispering in his ear saying, you know what, that's onside, you don't need to go and check it. But that's not really being presented to the user very well. So the user thinks, well, all offside decisions are offside, when in fact they're just not seeing the ones that are sort of being debated that are fine. That's hopefully something we can sort of bring to life a bit more in a future version to just make it a bit more clear what's happening. But saying that, there are other sort of VAR decisions like fouls or whether a challenge has been deemed inside or outside the box. They're more up for grabs, so to speak. The ref will go over to the little box, he'll check, and the decision could go either way. So I think with offside, yeah, it's not great. With the other decisions, it should be a surprise sort of to everyone what happens in those situations.
Now, every now and then someone pops up and they say, well, why can't Football Manager do what Paradox Games do? And release one game and then over the next 7 or 8 years, release like a dozen updates and expansions and then rip the whole thing down and start it again. But as I understand it, that's a legal impossibility, isn't it?
Yeah, I think licensing is going to be the main thing here. Some people might not know who are listening to this show, but we actually have to stop digitally selling versions of Football Manager within about sort of 12 or 13 months of it being released due to the licenses running out. So you might find, for instance, if you wanted to go back and buy Football Manager 2020 via, say, Steam or Epic, you can't do it anymore via those sort of digital services. So for that reason, I think things are unlikely to change at our end. And sort of whilst it's not an impossibility for something like this, I mean, it would be a huge technical challenge as well. I mean, you yourself, you know how much goes into each version of the game and how much of a web the game is in terms of how areas tie together. If we, say, started doing DLC to improve certain areas, it's very difficult to kind of almost plug that suddenly into the game in that manner. Because it just sort of, as I said, it ties into everything else, like the player happiness. If you change all that, then it has knock-ons elsewhere in terms of contracts, in terms of all sorts of stuff. So to make it all compatible with existing saves would be a bit mind-boggling. And sort of personally, I mean, I love Paradox Games myself, and I absolutely respect sort of the way they do things and their techniques. But I think there's something to be said for kind of selling a game and it sort of being what it is, like everything included under kind of one price. I know for Football Manager, we sell the in-game editor separately, but aside from that the entire core FM experience is there. You don't have to pay anything extra to, say, manage in a certain league or anything like that. It's pretty much sort of what you see is what you get when you buy a copy of Football Manager.
Also, generally speaking, Henry VIII's attributes don't change much, from between 2019 and 2020. So a lot less work required. Now, I've always just thought that I think that an hour's worth of entertainment is worth £1 of my money. And I use this for every game I buy on anything, and indeed for, books and things. £1 is a perfectly reasonable, dare I say, even generous price for an hour of entertainment. And the game is, what, 40 quid? I reckon I've rattled up 40 quid in the first week. I'm in profit by week two. So I'm all in favour. Neil, thank you so much for coming on to explain all the update stuff. It's fast becoming a tradition here now to put our SI guest into a stasis booth, hold him in a sense of timeless sleep until such time that we reach the letters part of the show where we kind of defrost you and bring you out. Is that okay?
Sounds great to me. I could do with a nap.
Okay, quick message for the 12 listeners to this show who aren't already subscribers to The Athletic. It's a guess, but let's be honest, it's probably a good one. We do big articles. People who play Football Manager have, on average, 800% larger attention spans than people who play the other football game. Again, that's just a guess, but again, it's probably a good one. Now, The Athletic hired the best writers to write the best articles. They don't do 500-word expansions of ideas their writers had on the loo that morning. I mean, what sort of person would eke out a 10-year career in football writing doing that sort of stuff, eh? Am I right? Anyway, The Athletic is brilliant. It's more than worth the full price. But if you get your skates on and use this code right now, you can get a full year subscription for half price. That's £1 a week. But seriously, you have to do it now. You have to type theathletic.com/FMPod because this ends on February 25th and I don't know what time on February 25th. So don't take the chance of missing out. £1 a week for a year. That's insane. theathletic.com/FMPod. Get it done.
The Football Manager Show Community Centre.
So it's a different sort of thing today. Pete Green, better known in the community as FM Greeno, wrote to us. Pete, I'm ever so sorry to say, lost two friends to COVID this year. They died within hours of each other, and they left behind a six-year-old girl whose world has just essentially exploded. Pete Green and others in the FM community, like Aussie Villain, have set up a huge Ryder Cup-style FM competition to raise money for the poor girl. It's attracted the attention and the support of some of the biggest names in the creative community. I'm also told that FM Scout will be screening some of these games as these creators come together and play games against each other. It's going to be quite a thing. And I think Pete puts it best. He says, I just wanted to showcase what a brilliant and supportive community the FM creator community is. The enthusiasm with which people have jumped on board, the offers of help in setting up and arranging everything have been truly humbling. We hope it's going to be a great and fun event for all involved, but more importantly, that it will raise funds for a very worthy cause. Now, if you want to get involved and show your support, check out Pete's Twitter feed. It's at FM_Greeno. Check out our Twitter feed as well, at FMPodAthletic, because we'll make sure that the Just Giving link is there. Now, elsewhere, Jake Brown got in touch recommending an FM20 database that recreated the 2006-2007 season, which is a lovely shout. And it did get me thinking, has anyone seen a really, really good vintage mod? Because these are incredibly difficult to do. There's so much data. We were just hearing earlier from Neil about the data and the things you have to do. There was one of these on Football Manager 2007, I think, that recreated the 1988-89 season, which is one of my pivotal seasons, one of the maybe even the third or fourth football season that I was really, really into. And it was so good. It was like being in a time machine, all the right players in the right place, all the teams in the right divisions. It was even the ability to sign Maradona, you know, if you had that sort of money. If I was to be picky, I do hate myself for doing this, but I am a bit of a perfectionist. I'd have to say that the creator's failure to adjust the heights of the players he was altering turned into a bit of an issue, because it's rather harder to recreate Liverpool's dominance of the 1980s with a 5'4" Alan Hansen and a 5'6" Mark Lawrenson. But again, that is just me being picky. So if there's anything out there along those sort of lines, let me know. Let me know what you found out there, and do it a service. Nominate it for the Community Centre. Just write to me, imacintosh at theathletic.com, or on that Twitter account again, at FMPodAthletic.
You're listening to the Football Manager Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's time for your letters, and again, we've got so many that we've got a backlog going on to the next show. So let's crack straight in. Abby, what have we got?
You didn't get any love letters then from your sexy football?
No, none at all. Aww. None at all. Just a kind of a look of disappointment from my wife when she heard the trailer. I don't want to dig too deep on that.
No, let's move on. We've got a letter here from Shantanu who says, I've played Football Manager for years now, and one of my favourite parts of the game is nurturing young players and making them better. However, despite playing for quite a few years, the actual way in which youth development works is still a mystery to me. Namely, what's the right age to start loaning a player out to get experience? Is there such a thing as playing a youngster too much or too soon? Despite having great personalities, lots of game time, good performances, and no real injuries, why do I see my youth prospects often not reach their full potential? Would be great to get some answers from the FM team. That's you, Neil.
Well, Neil is out of stasis. What have you got for us, Neil?
That's a great question. Yeah, and it's something that sort of challenges, I think, every FM player to an extent. And It is about finding the right level for the player at the right age. So if you've got, say, a 17-year-old who's absolutely ripping it up in youth team football, sort of scoring a hat-trick every other game, they're not really being challenged enough. They need to get that kind of extra challenge to enable their development. So that's the perfect opportunity to either blood them in the first team or, as you say, look to loan them out. If, however, you then loan that player out and you see they're really struggling, getting a really low average rating, or perhaps not even making the match day squads, you might want to think about getting the old recall button out and getting them back. So it's really sort of, it's very much dependent on how they perform in that situation. And personally, like, the rule of thumb for me is once you get to around sort of the 19-20 age point, that's when you really want to be looking to loan them out, because generally up to that point, they should be developing quite well within your youth teams. Obviously, it's partly dependent on whether you've just got the under-23s and under-18s or whether you've just got one of those. So it may be worth bumping up one level first and then looking to loan them out. So there's also a lot you can consider in terms of the training side. So if you just leave the training to, say, your assistant, they're going to do okay. But if you really sort of get involved, sort of pull your sleeves up a bit and sort out some good schedules, you'll find the development will sort of increase and they will get better faster. So just bear that all in mind. And I guess the final point to say is sometimes a young player may look amazing and you think, right, I'm onto a winner here, and they just, their potential isn't quite there. They'll never sort of go beyond that level they're at, and sometimes you just have to cut your losses and say, I'll move on to another player.
What else have we got, Abby?
We've got this one coming in from Patrice, who says, I'm currently a season in with a Leicester save. Reached a respectable fourth place in my first season, gaining the elusive Champions League spot. Anyhow, Jamie Vardy had done me proud, but at 35, he is now ageing. In true Football Manager style, I replaced him with another pressing forward, Andrea Belotti, whilst keeping him around and offering Vardy a coaching role. When I signed Belotti, he was a 4.5-star pressing forward. But now we're in December, and he's only 3 stars. Any idea why?
So with this one, it's one of those things that isn't necessarily that clear to the user manager. So with the star ratings, there's a number of things which are kind of taken into account. So it'll look at the status of your team. So what kind of level they're playing at. It'll look at the players within your squad. It's kind of getting that average of how good your team is compared to other teams. So what I think may have happened here is when he signed this player, initially it was kind of looking at the Premier League and saying, well, this is sort of the standard of this level. And compared to this level, they're a 4.5-star player. Then when he gets to sort of December time, it's actually comparing against the Champions League, where obviously the standard is higher. And it's saying, well, actually, compared to this level of player, he's not quite as good. Now, this doesn't mean that the player's ability has dropped or anything like that. It's just used as kind of like a comparative model against other players that they're playing against. So I wouldn't worry. He's still a very good player, and sort of a 3-star player at Champions League level is an exceptional player. You're very rarely going to get sort of 5-star players at that level, because it means they've essentially got the highest rating you could ever get, 200 CA, which hopefully should be extremely rare, otherwise something's gone badly wrong in the game.
That's awesome. I never knew any of that.
It's just learning curve for you as well, Ian.
It really is. What else have we got in there?
Our next question comes in from a World Cup winning scrum half. His name is Matt Dawson. He likes to build a team and relies a lot on potential fan base. So Matt wants to know, what ways can you gain more fans to gain bigger stadiums?
It's funny, actually, in my home save, I recently had sort of the city council of my team decide that I needed a 50,000 capacity stadium when I was averaging only about 3,000 or 4,000 fans a week. So yeah, that's a bit strange now, where I've got this situation where the East Stand, there's one fan in. The South Stand, there's probably about 4 fans in, and they're just waving to each other. So I kind of had the opposite problem in my game.
Good but in a pandemic.
Were you managing Darlington?
Sadly not. No, it's some random Turkish side. And it's one of these things where they're actually building the stadium in real life. So again, Football Manager, we're just following what's going on in real life. But yeah, whether or not they'll end up with 5,000 fans in real life, who knows? But anyway, going back to the initial question, the classic one is, well, keep winning games and keep scoring goals and the fans will eventually come and watch your team. But there is something to kind of bear in mind is if you're in a kind of a small village in the middle of nowhere, you're always going to struggle to have loads of fans just because the population isn't there. I mean, a prime example sort of from the last 10, 15 years was when Hoffenheim worked their way up into the Bundesliga. They're essentially a village team. So it's quite difficult for them to pull fans in from elsewhere. So there's always going to be a little bit of a restriction. But But other things you can do, you can create affiliations with foreign fan bases to kind of increase your sales, your sponsorships, things like that. But in terms of match day numbers, it might not increase that much. But yeah, keep winning games, get into the big competitions, do really well. And eventually sort of that trickle will turn into more fans coming in day to day. So hopefully, if you keep doing well, you'll eventually get there.
Abby, next question is one straight from the very centre of my heart.
I was thinking it's like one of the greatest philosophical questions in football. And this is the last question. It's from Emil. And he says, I've just bought my first Wonder Kid, 19-year-old new gen who's asking for number two. He's an attacking midfielder and the number two shirt is currently occupied by my captain. If I give him another number, does it make any difference to his performance or his happiness? And here's the real kicker. Do squad numbers matter in any way at all?
I've always been a huge fan of squad numbers. Like I have some numbers myself that I almost think of as like the most important numbers. Like it's sort of like the number 7 for George Best kind of thing. I'll only give it to the best of the best. In game terms, a player might get a little bit upset, but it shouldn't have huge ramifications on the rest of the team. You're not going to be having to call these big team meetings because everyone's kicking off at each other. It's not kind of like the Shearer Ferdinand issue back in Newcastle, 10, 15 years ago. So I think, though, that it is one of those areas that we may look to sort of add additional things to for future versions, make it a bit more of a big deal. But it's one of those where we're getting a little bit down the road in micromanagement. So maybe there might be something that's sort of a bit further away. But short answer to your question is just do what you like and it should be fine.
Emil, I would be disgusted if an attacking midfielder asked for the number two. Number two is for the right back, and that is all. That's an appalling
well
thing. You should find him 2 weeks' wages immediately. Neil, thanks so much for coming out of stasis to answer those questions. Much appreciated.
No worries. Glad I could be of some assistance.
Finding it difficult to get off to sleep? Well, you are not alone. After a long day of Zoom, doom, and gloom, it's hard to relax and just drop off. Maybe you need a bedtime story. I know, there's a lot of them out there. They ask you to imagine that you're laying on a lily of contentedness, drifting upon a lake of calm, holding hands with the otter of placidity. Our one isn't like that. It's a football bedtime story, and it sounds like this.
When Brian Clough arrived at Nottingham Forest in January 1975, they were a mediocre provincial club whose most recent success was winning the FA Cup in 1959. But they were 13th in the old second division now. Clough, too, was damaged goods.
So give it a go tonight. Subscribe to Football Bedtime Stories on your favourite podcast provider now.
The Football Manager Book Club.
The best football book ever, in my humble opinion, is The Glory Game by Hunter Davis. Spurs, 1972. It's the behind-the-scenes story of a season football book. And we're not talking about it today. We're talking about Brave New World, Spurs 2016, Guillaume Balague's behind-the-scenes story of a season football book. The comparison is not a kind one. And that's not Balague's fault. Indeed, it's worth pointing out just how hard it is to even get half an hour one-on-one with a Premier League manager these days. At the very zenith of my journalistic career was having poached eggs on toast at 7 a.m. with Tony Pulis. Balague's achievement here to get this sort of access is absolutely immense. But even he can't get the sort of access that Hunter Davis enjoyed 40 years ago. And the book itself, therefore, is a selection of contemporary reflections on the 2016-17 season, dropped into a sack with a selection of autobiographical memories of a life in football in Argentina and Spain, and then sort of given a bloody good shake. So what you end up with isn't really the story of a season, and it isn't really an autobiography. It just sort of falls somewhere in the middle. But that isn't really the issue. The issue here is that the book unveils Pochettino, and this is a man whose teams I have long admired, as a sort of cross between David Brent and Owen Wilson. Here's a quote. An Argentine friend told me that lemons absorb negative energy and cleanse the air, which is why I have a tray of them in my office. Shortly afterwards, he says, for whatever reason,
I've been able to develop an ability which allows me to see others' auras.
I mean, what is it with Tottenham managers? It's not long before he goes full Glenn Hoddle, stirring up memories of playing Kenny G on the bus to the 1998 World Cup. He says,
"This week, I have to play them the video for Love My Life by Robbie Williams, a song that sums it all up. It's a hymn to feeling empowered, to loving life, and being at peace with oneself. It's where it all starts."
I mean, if it starts with Robbie Williams, where in the name of all that is holy does it end? Now, I mean, this might just be me being old and grumpy and generally hoping that a football book feels like a football book and not like 3 hours in a restaurant in LA. But if you tolerate this sort of thing, you've got to ask yourself, what's next? Footballers celebrating historic victories by singing Adele songs? Anyway, let's put it to our two tests. Did it make me a better football manager? Not really, no. Did it make me want to play football manager? Well, yes, in that I would have played pretty much anything just to put it down. Brave New World is £3.99 on Kindle and Apple Books, but so is The Glory Game. Make your choice.
The Football Manager Bundesliga Challenge.
And now, forced into this darkened corner like a rich teenage girl on a family holiday who's been caught doinking the dance teacher, but is now about to be dragged into the limelight by aforementioned dance teacher to have what will very much be the time of her life while her father sits in the shadows and fumes. It's the FM Bundesliga Challenge. And hello, Alex Stewart.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
I am pretty much the same as your voice suggests that you are, because it's taken a turn, and I have to give some context straight away. If you've read on The Athletic as we chronicle this, you'll have thought, yeah, it's going fairly well for me and not so good for Alex, but nothing too disastrous. We've only played two games in December, and we stopped for two reasons. One, that the next game is Stuttgart against Schalke, and I needed that time to figure out how to record my screen so I can share it with you, because misery loves company. But two, because it's gone very, very, very bad. I mean, less bad for you, Alex, but terrible for me.
I got a 2-1 win against Freiburg, who you did point out cheerfully beforehand and not very good. So I'm not sure how much I can take from that. And then just a really, really woeful performance against FC Köln, where we barely generated anything. I've switched formation again. I'm trying to find something that's got a bit more solidity. I've got a couple of other tweaks in mind, which obviously I'm not going to say anything about because you're my next opponent. But I feel like I'm working towards something. I'm just not quite sure what it is yet.
It's a good time to play me. All my problems stem from the thing I highlighted right at the start, which is Schalke just had hardly any fullbacks. And it's taken very little time for that to really kick in. Injuries and suspensions. And Kilian Ludovic, who is fundamentally, I think, the worst footballer I've ever found on Football Manager. He is solely responsible for every goal that goes in. And there have been a few, because we've lost 1-4-1 and 1-3-1. I'm not going to have my players back fit in time for Alex's visit. And it isn't just that there's a weakness through having lesser players. It's that my team is reliant upon fullbacks getting forward and providing width so that the inverted wingers can go inside. And without those players, without the ability to do that, we're not scoring goals. The only goals we're getting are long throws and near post corners. It's really, I mean, when this game bites you in the arse, it really goes in with teeth.
It does. It does. And I kind of feel like this feels harder than anything else I've done. And I do want to point out here that I've got another save running, which is the one where you start with no coaching badges and unemployed and try and work your way towards winning the Continental Championship on each of the five continents. I believe it's called the Pentagon Challenge. And I've just completed my first full season in the Mexican Expansion League with Celia, and we've won the double. That both the opening stage and the closing stage, my main striker got 34 goals. So I'd like to point out that I am not as bad at this game as what the Bundesliga Challenge might suggest. But I feel with your struggles, particularly at fullback, up against the wonderful Silas Wamangituka, maybe this next match will be the turning point for me, just ramping it up a little bit.
I would also like to stress that yesterday I started my new update save and I set very strict rules. This is basically going to be the only save I have now. If I get sacked, I will just go wherever I go and I will keep going. I will not start a new game of FM21. Until FM22 comes out, and I'll start a new game on that. And I've somehow got the Marseille job, and I've won my first game in the Champions League, and then I've gone to Nantes, who are pushing for a Champions League place, and I've beaten them 4-0 away from home. And then we get back to Schalke, and they're just this misbegotten team, perpetual losers that I can't get a sprig of hope or joy from. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, do make sure that you are following us on Twitter, which is @FMPodAthletic. There'll be updates there. We're going to do this game, I think, on Thursday, aren't we, Alex?
I believe so. And I will be wearing my new Stuttgart shirt, which I have bought to bring me luck.
I don't know what I'll be wearing, and I just don't feel that anything's going to help me at this stage. We will get that recorded and provide some sort of director's commentary. We'll get that out there, and it will all be written up and on The Athletic on Tuesday. So if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, and you really should be, make sure you're there. Alex, until next time, farewell. Adieu.
Yes, let's work on set pieces.
And that has been our show. Your guests today were Neil Brock from Sports Interactive and Alex Stewart off the TIFO. Your producer was Sports Journalism Awards One to Watch contender Abby Patterson, and I am still, regrettably, Ian McIntosh.
The Athletic.